as a Christian coming to this data, you know, how should I allow that to speak into what I see, where it is really bleak in a lot of ways, but am I supposed to practice hope?
Welcome to Dangerous Dogma, the authority on questioning authority. I'm Brian Kaler, president of Word and Way. You can learn more about us at wordandway.org. In this episode, we're going to have a conversation with Andrew Whitehead. He's an associate professor of sociology at IUPUI in Indiana and co-director of the Association of Religion Data Archives there at the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture. He is one of the leading scholars on Christian nationalism and co-author of the 2020 book, Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. And we'll be talking about that book because it's coming out now in an updated paperback edition. It's an excellent book, and I really hope that you'll check it out, especially after this conversation. And as you're reading the book, be sure to also subscribe to our Substack newsletter, A Public Witness, where we often write about Christian nationalism to help you understand its impact in our politics and our churches today. You can learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wordandway.org. And now here's my conversation with Andrew Whitehead, co-author of Taking America Back for God. Well, Andrew, first of all, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you, Brian.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have this conversation. I've enjoyed getting to talk with you in the past, but this time we've turned on the recording, and so we're going to, you know, let people peek in and listen in on our conversation. And I'm especially excited to talk to you about your book. It came out in 2020, and we'll kind of get back to that time in a moment, but It's coming out in an updated paperback edition. And so I thought this is a great time for people who aren't familiar with what you and your co-author Sam Perry wrote about, Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. Sam actually mentions this just a few episodes ago. I talked with Sam about his new book that he's co-authored with Philip Gorski, The Flag and the Cross, and he made some references to this book, and it's coming out now in early June with a paperback edition, and so I'm excited to talk about this book and for those that may have missed it. But let's start with that idea first of Christian nationalism. It's important. We did this with Sam, but I want to do this with you as well. What do you mean when you say Christian nationalism? I think it's important that we have our definitions to start with.
Yeah, definitely. So when we talk about Christian nationalism, what we're really talking about and the way that we think about it is as a cultural framework. And so a cultural framework is a collection of, and can be collections of narratives, symbols, value systems, and all of these things intertwine and essentially create kind of a scaffold over which, you know, we overlay everything else about how we view the world. And so Christian nationalism really operates as this foundational set of ways of seeing the world that guide people into telling them, you know, this is what you should think about the world. This is how you should interpret events. This is what you should hope for in the future and how you should get there. It really serves to identify a way of not only experiencing the world, but then also acting out within it. And with that, as a cultural framework, those symbols, narratives, and value systems all revolve around this idea that a certain type of Christianity should be privileged in the public sphere, that to be a true American, to belong socially, to be civically active means you must be this type of Christian. And we say a certain type of Christian because what we find over and over with Christian nationalism is that it really does operate as essentially like an ethnic, religio-political orientation, where it really does privilege white, culturally, politically, religiously conservative, natural-born citizens. When they're saying Christian and a Christian nation, they really mean people like us, and it really does fall within those boundaries.
Yeah, and I want to kind of hold at that moment right there for a bit longer. So this idea of Christian nationalism and Christianity. And obviously, Christian nationalism is borrowing from Christian symbols and Christian texts and Christian language. But I wonder if you can help us flesh out, is Christian nationalism Christian almost? Is really, I think, a question that a lot of people are struggling with.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. It's something, too, that I continue to wrestle with in my own thought process, both, you know, as a scholar, but then as an individual, and person of faith. And so I think in some sense, we can't look at folks that strongly embrace Christian nationalism and say, oh, they're just not Christians. They are. So in that sense, I think Christian nationalism, the way I would think about it, is a really unhealthy expression of Christianity in some ways. It is borrowing from those symbols, those narratives, and taking those religious symbols and narratives, and then adding in all of this cultural baggage. And I think it's a lot of that cultural baggage that tends to, and in my opinion, really pushes it towards unhealthy expressions, and in many ways, anti-Christ-like expressions of Christianity. I think it pushes people to be unloving people. and in that sense, they aren't living out what I think and what a lot of people think is a healthier Christianity. And so I think in this sense, I like to think of it as there isn't some one true Christianity, but there are a lot of expressions, and Christian nationalism is a really unhealthy expression. And I think it takes people away from those expressions of Christianity that other Americans and global Christians, even evangelicals in other countries, right, are practicing and kind of looking at what we're doing here and thinking, what is that? It just doesn't make sense to them. It doesn't compute. And I think that's a lot of that cultural framework that gets mixed in and added into it. And so I think we can disentangle them. And I think it is difficult. It'll take time, but they can be distinguished. I think healthier expressions that are loving of neighbor, loving of other, siding with the marginalized, rather than the Christianity of Christian nationalism, which is all about defending your own tribe, you know, trying to privilege what you want in the public sphere. It's more about what we want to benefit our group, rather than a life of sacrifice and giving for those around us, as one example.
Another thing that I hear quite often about Christian nationalism these days, particularly from those that are, you know, critical of the work that you and others are doing to call attention to this dangerous ideology, is they're like, well, that's just a made up term, you know, because of January 6th, right? But, you know, and that's why I think your all's book, which literally has Christian nationalism in the subtitle, is so significant. It came out in 2020, but you're actually writing it, you know, in the spring of 2019 because of publishing world, right? It takes a year for things to hit the
yeah,
world.
Totally.
And of course, also in 2019, the Baptist Joint Committee led an effort that's still ongoing, Christians Against Christian Nationalism. And so there are these conversations that are happening well before not only the 2020 election, but especially before January 6th. So I wonder if you can help us understand, when did Christian nationalism as a concept start to become something that you as a sociologist have spent a lot of time, even before this book, doing other academic mm-hmm. studies, trying to measure it and figure out what it is and its impact?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think for me personally, my journey with this area of research really began in earnest in grad school. So that was 2007 to 2012. And then working with and thinking through how as we call it in sociology and social sciences, operationalize. So we want to take this concept and figure out, well, how can we measure it kind of in real life? And so, you know, Sam and I started working together in 2013 on our first paper, peer-reviewed journal article, looking at Christian nationalism and attitudes towards same-sex marriage. And so we saw that it was a very powerful predictor then. And so we started working on other papers looking at racial attitudes. And so those came out in 2015. And so for the last 8-9 years, you know, we've been studying this in one form or another and reading about it. But even with our research, this concept of Christian nationalism predates us, obviously. I know one influential book is Michelle Goldberg's Kingdom Coming, and that was in the mid-2000s where she's talking about Christian nationalism. And then historians have been, you know, identifying this and talking about it for decades. And as we look back in our country's history, you know, white Christian nationalism has been with us for a very long time and has been a part of our body politic for centuries. And so it isn't as though this was invented right after the insurrection. It was very influential, you know, looking at data collected in 2007. Influential in data we collected in 2017 and in the data we've collected since 2017. And so it's something that has been a really powerful way to understand why Americans vote, behave, act, believe as they do when they're thinking about what it means to be an American and how our society should operate.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. One of the things that you kind of hinted at there in your answer that I wanted to draw attention to is, I mean, this is an ideology that it really is significant. You talked about you and Sam and others have been doing this research of finding like people that are holding the Christian nationalism, like, and then testing what they believe about other things. And it is an ideology that, I mean, it's powerful and it helps explain a lot of other political, cultural, religious perspectives and opinions that if you measure those who score high on Christian nationalism versus those who score low. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what it is that you all are doing as sociologists in trying to measure this concept.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think what we bring to the table is really trying to, again, measure and operationalize this concept and see, well, how can we see if this exists out in the quote unquote real world? And so the way that we do that is through national survey data primarily. And so, through nationally representative samples of Americans, we ask a number of questions. In some studies that we do, we might use one question to get at this idea of Christian nationalism. In our book, we use a scale of 6 different questions. And then in more recent research, we've added in a couple new questions and gotten rid of a couple others. So we really aren't trying to say there's only one way to measure it. What we find is that even when we measure it different ways, it is equally strong. And so that really bolsters this idea that we're measuring something real. Right? You can use different questions and it really is getting at. And what we do is we ask folks questions like how strongly they agree if the federal government should advocate for Christian values or if the federal government should declare the United States a Christian nation. Or we might ask if they believe to be a true American, it's very important or not important at all to be a Christian. So again, these ideas of what is our civic identity and does it have to include Christianity or how much should Christianity be privileged in the public sphere? And so what we find over and over is as we ask these questions and we scale them together and we run different statistical models with these questions, we find that how, let's say, Brian, you're filling out this questionnaire, how you answer one is really strongly correlated with how you answer another and with how you answer the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, which means that this scale really, what we usually say is hangs together. These questions really are getting at this underlying concept. And then we take that, those 6 questions, we are able to pull them together and create a scale. So if you, let's say, I would guess Brian strongly disagree with maybe many of these questions, you would be at the low end of the scale. And then somebody who strongly agrees with many of these questions would be at the upper end. But what we find is that Americans really are spread all across this scale, which means that it isn't a binary. It isn't somebody's a Christian nationalist or they're not. What we find is that, and this is why we like to talk in terms of Christian nationalism and not ists, because it's this framework that we can embrace more or less. And where you're at on the scale, if you're in the middle, you're going to be different than somebody at the upper end or somebody at the very lower end. And so how people and where they find themselves on that scale really does matter. And so we're able to take this scale and then look at how they view racial issues and racial justice, how they view gender, sexuality, how they view the abortion issue or Roe versus Wade or religious freedom or, questions about immigration and refugees, all of these hot button issues. And again, what we find over and over is that when we're looking at a lot of these issues that polarize us, whether it's COVID and how the government should respond or the Black Lives Matter movement, Christian nationalism is strongly intertwined with how somebody is going to see and interpret those issues in their social worlds.
Yeah. And as you noted, it's a continuum. And so you all particularly talk about 4 types of Americans and you're right, but I'm not an ambassador. So I wonder if you can help
go out on a limb there.
I think you've seen enough of my writing to know that. So who are, kind of briefly, obviously there's a lot more detail in the book and I really do encourage people if they haven't to pick it up because you go into this in more detail, but who are these 4 types of Americans that you see when it comes to thinking about Christian nationalism?
Yeah, so when we create this scale, it's much easier to talk in terms of kind of general areas that people fall on the scale rather than upper or lower parts. And so we use, essentially as a heuristic device, we divide the scale into 4 quadrants. And so those that are in the lower quadrant, we call rejectors. And rejectors are those that really do, as the name describes, reject this idea that Christianity and this type of Christianity should be privileged in the public sphere, both in the past or even in the future. The next group up, so they would fall between the very middle of the scale, the mean, down to one standard deviation. We call these folks resistors. And so they might be a little more undecided. They might see a role for Christianity in the public sphere or maybe be a little hesitant, but their rejection of this idea of a Christian nation isn't as wholesale as rejectors. So they're resistant to it, but they might just be more undecided than our rejectors. Now on the upper half of the scale, the largest of the four groups, from the mean, right in the middle of the scale, up to the one standard deviation above the mean, we call accommodators. And they're about a third of the U.S. population, no matter when we measure this. And they haven't really shifted much in terms of size. So most Americans are accommodators. And accommodators are essentially the mirror image of resistors, where they see a positive role for Christianity in the public sphere. They might be a little undecided about it, but for the most part, they think, yeah, we're Christians and or mostly Christian, and Christians should have a say in the world. We shouldn't necessarily be the only ones having a say, but yeah, most of us are Christian. And so, you know, before the football game on a Friday night, if there's going to be a prayer, it should probably be Christian. And so they're supportive of that. Now, on the very top end are ambassadors, like you said. And these are folks that, again, are really true believers. They would see and believe that the U.S. has been, should be, needs to get back to being a Christian nation. And again, when they say Christian, it's people like us. And so when they're talking about what it means to be a true American or who has the right to participate, it needs to be, again, kind of this ethnic, political, religio understanding of a white conservative Christian, politically and religiously, native-born, natural-born citizen. And so ambassadors are, again, these true believers, and they're at the upper part of that scale.
So y'all write this book in 2019. It comes out in 2020. And I mean, then a number of things happen. I mean, obviously 2020 and the campaign was significant.
Right.
In the paperback edition, you'll all have a new preface kind of talking about some of the things that happened you know, since the book had first come out. And you talk about some of Trump's campaign rhetoric during the 2020 campaign. And you all note that it's almost as if Trump had read our book as an instruction manual. I mean, obviously we know
right.
we didn't, but right there, like he's fitting it so well. And then, of course, you also, after noting that you all called really essentially a lot of things that were going to be happening in 2020, you write, but despite all that we got right, even we were shocked to see the Christian flags and T-shirts, crosses, and even a prayer in Jesus's name in the Senate chamber on January 6, 2021. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps we, like many other Americans, were too optimistic about the possibility of a peaceful transfer of power during the current era of extreme misinformation, cultural anxiety, racial resentment. So I wonder if we could talk about that moment, right? I mean, yeah. You know, in some ways, you're probably watching a lot of what was happening in the campaign. You're feeling like, see, Christian nationalism really is a problem. Then January 6th happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were shocked, you were surprised, but I wonder if you can, you know, tell us a little bit more about what that moment was like watching it for you.
Yeah, no, I probably like you, Brian. I remember where I was sitting, turning on the TV, hopping on social media to just kind of follow the, you know, AP News or whoever else, just to see what exactly is going on here. And, you know, the way that I like to describe it is that it was shocking to see. It was shocking to see, you know, the mob on the steps and breaking into the chambers and breaking down windows and the violence that we saw just on national television. So it was shocking, but I would say it wasn't surprising. Because this was always a possibility. And, you know, just to kind of shout out Sam and Phil's new book, The Flag and the Cross, you know, I like the way that they talk about it, that it was an eruption. And with Christian nationalism, white Christian nationalism, January 6th wasn't the first time in our nation's history that we've seen political violence violence after an outcome. A political outcome that essentially white men or white Americans were unhappy about. And it won't be the last. And I think we're silly if we think that that isn't true, because this cultural framework has diffused across the population. It's a part of our body politic. And so I wasn't surprised, but it was shocking. And I think always will be shocking to see something like that. And so as I sat watching, and then the images are coming in, and we see the videos of the prayers on the Senate floor, and, you know, the Proud Boys, an explicitly, you know, racist paramilitary organization, kneeling and praying a prayer that you could hear at any Bible study across the U.S. in the evangelical congregation. And so really, yeah, reckoning with that legacy, that history, that reality, that while those that attack the Capitol, maybe they're a small slice of American Christians, but they went back to communities where views like theirs are not necessarily seen as fringe or extreme, right? There are people in their home communities that were like, well, I wouldn't do that myself, but I get it. Like, I understand. And so I think that's the real danger, is that with Christian nationalism, it creates a fertile ground for extremism to take root. And that's what we saw and will continue to see, even with the tragic shooting in Buffalo that we saw, you know, just this past week, this idea of great replacement theory. And so that racialized understanding of what it means to be a true American and how Christianity is intertwined with that, I think, yeah, led to and provided that space for January 6th and will continue to do so in this country.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned the shooting of Buffalo, and the manifesto seems to also fit with what you were talking about earlier about Christian nationalism, not necessarily aligning, you know, directly with Christianity. So we have some, you know, some Christians are not holding to Christian nationalism, and some who hold to Christian nationalism aren't Christian. And mm-hmm. he writes about, you know, while not being a Christian, believing in a number of Christian beliefs as he so, you know, saw it. Right. And so there is this connection of Christian nationalism doesn't even line up, you know, completely within the Christian tradition.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. We see, you know, unaffiliated folks, those that would not be religious or, you know, in any sense practicing, can be ambassadors and embrace this idea. And it is this privileging of this type of Christianity and all that cultural baggage. But I think in some ways it cloaks, you know, this desire for a certain group to be privileged in our cultural hierarchy. It cloaks it in religious language and in some ways tries to, you know, hide that fact. But those are strong racialized beliefs and underpinnings. And so, yeah, it really does in some ways take from and steal from the Christian tradition. And so we do have, you know, Christians that are embracing it, but then others that aren't, but it's kind of bringing them together in some way. And I forget now where I read it, but a recent study too, just talking about how it can help create this fusion, right? And bring people together that maybe don't agree on a whole lot else, but they agree on this. And that can be really powerful and really dangerous in a lot of ways.
And then you all also note in the new edition about COVID and you know, the impact that Christian nationalism has had in exacerbating the pandemic. In fact, you all write that Christian nationalism can now literally be said to have contributed to thousands of American deaths. I wonder if you can talk about, you know, what have we experienced during the last 2 years of pandemic that helped show the danger of Christian nationalism?
Yeah. You know, we had a number of studies come out, and it was really incredible and fortuitous in some way that Sam, with some colleagues, was able to gather data every couple months, right when the pandemic started and throughout that. And so people, again, can find that in their new book. And we mention and talk about it a little bit in the paperback version of ours, as you mentioned. But we find a number of things, you know, as we look at Christian nationalism and how people view and think about vaccines. We find that the more they embrace Christian nationalism, they tend to be much more likely to question scientific authority because they believe the Bible should be the final authority. And on matters where science and the Bible might disagree on who has the moral authority, they're going to choose the Bible. And so they're able to talk about vaccines and think about vaccines as this encroachment on the moral authority of the Bible. And so they're much more likely to be anti-vaccine. And then we find in later data, if we're talking about the COVID vaccine, they're much less likely to want to take that. And so that's one big area, is questioning science and scientific authority. In another way, we see that people who embrace Christian nationalism are much more likely to view it and its effects in kind of a racialized understanding. And so when they're talking about, or we see that the, you know, infections and death rates, which we find are higher in minority communities, especially Black African-American communities, Americans who embrace Christian nationalism are more likely to say that it's their own fault, essentially, that biologically they're just more likely. So they're much more likely to ignore this idea that there are structural inequalities that are leading to higher death rates in these marginalized communities, and more likely to just say, well, that's just their problem, or to blame and use racialized language to blame, you know, where the COVID virus came from. So I won't even use some of the racial epithets that they talk about, the COVID-19 virus. Trump has used them and others, but they're much more likely to racialize it and lead to, you know, anti-Asian, you know, hate crimes, and within the public sphere. And then we also find that they're more likely to say that we should privilege the economy. So we need to protect the economy. So don't shut down jobs. Don't shut things down. We need to keep that moving. They're much more likely to say we should privilege that rather than trying to care for the vulnerable. And so there's this strong libertarian underpinning of, you know, the market and individual freedom is ideal, and any sort of understanding of protecting the group or taking steps to protect the group, they're much more likely to disagree with. And so we know that while some of our large scale mitigation techniques were really successful or are successful, others maybe aren't as much. But for the most part, those big, you know, steps really do help save lives, but they were much more likely to oppose those. And so when we have, you know, large groups of people not wanting to vaccinate, not wanting to mask, not wanting to social distance, to still meet in big groups, we even had story after story of congregations that were meeting and COVID would spread throughout and there would be deaths. And so in that sense, there really was a real world implication for this cultural framework when we were facing a pandemic.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I mean, the pandemic's not over, but we are obviously in a lot better space than we have been at times. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll see how that impact continues to, but other things that are ongoing is, you know, Christian nationalism. This is one of the things that you and Sam, you know, specifically write in the New Edition is like, you know, Joe Biden putting his hand on the Bible on January 20th last year and taking the oath of office didn't suddenly end Christian nationalism.
Right. Yeah.
And so I wonder if you could speak into that. I mean, you all kind of balance this line, I think, between the, like, there's still a clear and present danger, but also you have some hope. And so, you know, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe we should start with the ongoing danger side first. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you see the power of Christian nationalism continuing today? And I think particularly, you know, we're in, you know, 2022, midterm elections are going on throughout this year. Mm-hmm. Like what do you see Christian nationalism still playing out right now?
Yeah, I do think, and I think our data, it's empirical data that, you know, shows that this is still a real threat. You know, so a couple of things, when we have candidates who are leaning into this rhetoric and using Christian nationalism as essentially, whether it's a dog whistle or a mating call, as my colleague Sam has talked about it, it is drawing people to them and getting them to vote. And then when they legitimate their win as the will of the sacred, and that is so powerful and can be so dangerous, because if they find out on election day that, oh, you didn't win, well, it must be the forces of evil that have come against me, or we need to do everything we can to ignore the will of the people because God, you know, wants me in office. And essentially that's what we heard with Trump in 2020. And so that is incredibly dangerous. And so we find that how Americans who are embracing Christian nationalism are understanding January 6th continues to shift and change. They see it more and more as possibly a necessary part of taking this country back rather than a riot or an insurrection. And so they're becoming more supportive of January 6th, which again is should be frightening to anybody that wants to live in a democracy. But then too, we see moves to roll back access to voting rights and to the vote. And that is ongoing. And Christian nationalism is a key part of that, that work, where we need the idea, the logic for them is we need to only allow true Americans to vote. And here's our list of who are true Americans. And so it's a privilege to vote, not a right. And so if you don't align with you know, what we see as a true American, you shouldn't have the right to vote. And so essentially gaming the system of making sure that democracy, as they understand it, quote unquote, works for them by only allowing the people that they would want to vote to vote. And so I think that's an ongoing threat. And so those are some of the big ones. I think, yeah, the possibility of political violence and also, you know, voter suppression are two of the really big threats that we're facing right now.
You know, I find that you made this comment, and it is true. And, you know, Trump, and we see this with rhetoric and other candidates, of this idea of like, well, you know, God wants me to win, or God wants this candidate to win. And so then if the candidate doesn't win, then that's proof that it was stolen or rigged, was because that was, you know, this was God's will. And at the same time, I find that argument so ironic, because it sounds like God's pretty impotent then. I mean, you know, if like,
yeah, that's
God's
really
will that you're going to win, then, you know, how could it be stolen by, you know, so easily? It's kind of ironic.
No, it really is. And that's such a good point. And this understanding of, you know, as they would understand it, the forces of evil are like simultaneously so strong we need to be afraid, but then also so weak that we can overcome it. And so it's this strange, it's this strange mix. But that's such a good point.
It's malleable theology though, right? I mean, because you can get it to fit. Like, so if something bad's happening, well, that's Satan. You know, if the other party's winning, that's Satan, you know, power. Mm-hmm. But if our party's winning, it's God at power, as opposed to perhaps thinking, you know, well, whoever wins, that was God's will, right? Or, you know, or that God was staying out of the election, you know, either way. I mean, but the theology is so malleable to fit your own politics that you were already holding.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. And I think that is that's the power, and really kind of a scary power, of when these identities get overlapped and stacked, and it's all about protecting your own tribe without any sort of critical self-reflection or reflection on your tribe. So no matter what happens, we have to win. And no matter what we do, it was always good. And so I think, as, you know, Christians, being able to critique any group that you're a part of, as it aligns with, you know, the dictates of the faith, is so important. I think that's something that gets lost. So Christian nationalism is not interested in saying, you know, we're wrong, or saying that we, you know, want to share power. It is, we are always right. We always need the power. It'll only be good if we're in power. And I think in a lot of ways that really tends to, you know, move in an opposite direction of the one laid out by, you know, Jesus and the disciples and those that were kind of guiding the early formation of the Christian church.
We'll be right back with the rest of this conversation, but first I want to remind you that you should subscribe to Warden Way's award-winning e-newsletter, A Public Witness. It will help you make sense of the world of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wardenway.org. And now, back to our conversation. So while you all are still cautioning us or warning us that to pay attention to Christian nationalism, it is clearly still a threat to our democracy and much more. You also say that, you know, you do have some hope, that you haven't given up hope. And so I wonder if you can talk about what is it that gives you hope despite the ongoing dangers of white Christian nationalism?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'll be interested too in your thoughts after I share mine, because you know, something that I hear with other scholars that are working in this area, we get this question a lot, we've noticed, where, you know, what are you hopeful about, or is there any hope? Because it can be really depressing to look at the history of race and religion and politics in the United States. And you know, one response that, you know, others working in this area, you know, might say is, it's not our job to give hope, right?
You're a sociologist. You're not supposed to give hope.
Right. We're supposed to show this is what is, or this is what happened. Really essentially, in you know, Sam and I have said this, and we in the book wanted to do this, is really hold up the mirror. And what we see there, we want it to be as clear as possible. So if we have, you know, to move on with that metaphor, gunk in our teeth, we can see it, take it out, and hopefully improve. So in that sense, I get it. It isn't our job to give hope. But then too, as a person of faith, you know, I think of those that have taught on hope or reading about hope, that it's a practice and it's a choice. And so as a Christian coming to this data, you know, how should I allow that to speak into what I see, where it is really bleak in a lot of ways, but am I supposed to practice hope? It isn't something that I should necessarily just feel, but that I'm supposed to choose in some sense to have hope and the fact that we are working and pushing in a particular direction. And so I think a couple of things that I try to remind myself of, and honestly, Brian, it depends on the time of day and the day, probably, if I'm going to be more cynical or, you know, feel like there is some hope. You know, I think a lot of individuals are wrestling with this. Our book and many other really amazing books that have come out recently, you know, The Color of Compromise or Jesus and John Wayne, that are wrestling with these big questions and looking at how a white American Christian church has really had some deep issues that it must wrestle with in histories. I see individuals reading these books, and especially young people when I go to college campuses, who at 20 are interacting with these works, and it's allowing them to see and understand the world that they grew up in, or, you know, who's gathered around the Thanksgiving table and understand, okay, this is what's happening. This is what I'm hearing. And having that framework at that age, you know, it does give me hope to think about where they'll be in 20 years. So I'll turn 40 this fall. If I think about 20 years ago, if I had had some of these books, you know, where it could have been. And so for individuals, I do see that really wrestling with it. I think institutions, which as a sociologist, again, institutions hold money and power and are really powerful. And I see less movement and wrestling, you know, on a large scale institutionally within the white Christian church. And so I think that's what the real challenge is. Are we going to see institutions try to reform? Or will the individuals have to try to reform those or move out and form new ones? So I don't know what that will be. But I think, you know, in those individual conversations, that does give me hope. But I don't know if there are aspects where you find hope. I'd be interested, because it can be tough in these times, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question to push back at. To me, you know, I would say, you know, I probably land on the cynical side of the continuum much more frequently than I do on the hope side. Not, you know,
probably, yeah.
You know, yeah. And I'm sure I have, you know, times of the day or days that I am more hopeful than others, but, you know, in general, yeah. I'm not as hopeful. But at the same time, when I stop and think about it, like, if I had no hope that, you know, the danger of Christian nationalism could be, you know, prevent it from spreading or stop. So, like, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you to broadcast a dangerous dogma. I wouldn't be writing what we're writing in A Public Witness. And elsewhere, like, you know, so
good point.
Clearly, like, I'm driven because I don't think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
I just think maybe it's more likely than not, at least in the short term, that, you know, like, we're still in a very dangerous period in our democracy. Mm-hmm. We've seen on January 6th how fragile it can be, how close we were. Mm-hmm. To, you know, going back, you know, generations, if you know, for, you know, for good, as far as an American democratic experiment. And so, you know, and the idea that the, you know, white evangelical church tradition that I grew up in could be responsible for the end of American democracy, you know, I feel even like an extra responsibility to speak into that moment to say that, you know, good. Like we can't be doing this in the name of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And I think, you know, your response, you know, is another aspect where part of the hope is finding others on this journey who are willing to say, okay, here's the line and I'm on this side. I think, you know, meeting you and others, that gives me hope that I'm not alone, right? There are a number of people doing this. And again, it may be inevitable in some sense. And this is, but at least when we look back, I know I was on this side and these people were with me. And I think that, yeah, I guess being faithful with others on that journey does give hope, even if maybe we aren't going to, or the outcome won't be exactly what we, you know, would love to see. That gives me hope sometimes too.
Well, if we all have to flee to Canada, hopefully I'll see you on the other side. So,
yeah. Yeah, totally.
We can open a compound or something there. So,
yeah.
So, you know, the book's been out 2 years in the hard copy. Obviously, there's been a lot of, you know, reviews and conversations and things that have emerged, you know, from this. Mm-hmm. What has it been like, you know, watching the conversation? Because, you know, you know, as an author, you spend the time, you're controlling the narrative, right? You get it all together, and then it goes out into the world and you kind of lose control of your own product mm-hmm. now, because now everybody else gets to say what they think about it. And so what has the last couple of years been? I know there's probably been, you know, good, bad, and ugly in responses, mm-hmm. But I wonder if you can share what you've seen in kind of the conversations around the book.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's been really, in some ways, fulfilling and sometimes fun to be a part of these conversations and to see, you know, people who are grateful for, what we were able to document, right. To be able to clearly name what this is and then, you know, use that however they might. So that's been really, encouraging. And I think too, you know, to see Christian nationalism as a concept and term used more and more to describe what we see happening, especially after the insurrection, that was kind of a peak point where it really hit a different gear. And so that's encouraging. We weren't the first ones to use the term, so we aren't claiming that at all, but it is great to see that more and more people are aware of it and using that. I think, you know, parts that have been where we push back or need to you know, be careful is folks, two things. One, saying, oh, this is just fringe. It may exist, but it's not indicative of the white evangelical church at all or Christianity at all. And so, you know, in the book, clearly we show that it isn't fringe. And so being clear about that on and on. And then you see folks who are like, yeah, I'll adopt this term. And in some ways, I think they're just trying to troll. And, you know, if they believe that we're, you know, non-Christian or leftists or whatever, and they think, well, if this gets them riled up, let's use it. And so they'll say, yeah, I'm Christian nationalist. We need to totally take over America and make it Christian. So you see this desire to kind of take the term and use it as something else too, where for the most part, they're not really, I doubt they've read the book or closely and they aren't really interested in understanding it. And so we just kind of keep moving on. But for the most part, it's been really rewarding, yeah, to see it be helpful and to bring this different aspect, because it's been written up about before, the history, historians have been clear on it. But I think providing that empirical data that we do, it's just been really wonderful to do that alongside Sam as well, to collaborate on that. So yeah, it's been interesting 2 years for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, you don't want to go down the rabbit hole too much and read all of the reviews and all of the comments. But.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, some of totally. Them are not verified purchases, right? Right. You know, the 1 and 2 star totally. Reviews are like never verified purchases, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, they'll just go on and say whatever. So if you read the book and like it, please do go to Amazon and review it, because we do get people that clearly just want to post whatever their, you know, their little icon is a Confederate flag. And so you kind of know they're there to say something else and smear it. But you kind of have to just turn you just have to turn away from some of that stuff. It's just not going to be useful.
Well, I obviously, you know, this is already coming out in paperback, and I know that you're working on, you know, more. What are you working on? What are you thinking about? What's coming next?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I'm working on another book that will come out in 2023 with Brazos Press, and I guess tentatively titled right now American Idolatry, Why Christians Must Confront Christian Nationalism. And so I'm really trying to write for a Christian audience. So our book is, as academic, we try to make it really open and easy to read. So it isn't, you know, like a straight academic book, but accessible. And in this book, though, I'm really speaking to, in some sense, my people. So other white Christians, really, to try and make the case that, you know, as I've taken a personal journey in reckoning with growing up in white evangelicalism, and how Christian nationalism is such a part of that institution, my personal journey reckoning with that, but then also my professional journey as a sociologist studying this and seeing what Christian nationalism is intimately intertwined with and in my faith, you know, from my faith in Jesus and my Christian faith, how Christian nationalism is an affront to the gospel and to living out a Christ-like ethic in the world. And so, you know, I'm essentially trying to argue that there are, you know, three main idols of Christian nationalism: power, fear, and violence. And when we want to have power over others based in fear of that group being able to have a say in our social world, that ultimately will move towards violence towards those other groups. And that is explicitly lived out in our history in the U.S. and in Christianity with racism and xenophobia, fear of immigrants and refugees. And so, yeah, when we idolize, and Christian nationalism idolizes those three idols, we move away from what Christ was here to show and to guide us on. And so, yeah, trying to make that case and hopefully, lead to a more empathic understanding within the church. Hopefully, those that maybe are accommodators, they'll sense that I have empathy for them. But just trying to say, hey, there are other expressions of Christianity. You don't have to say, oh, I'm not a Christian anymore. And to confront Christian nationalism is not to say that you can't be Christian, anything but. I think my desire to confront Christian nationalism flows out of my faith, the fact that I am a Christian. I want to see, other Christians move towards expressions of faith that confront and oppose Christian nationalism because it's so dangerous. So that's what I'm working on now. And hopefully we'll wrap that up in the next couple of months and then go through the process. But we'll see how it turns out. And I'm hopeful for it.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to reading that. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, when I had Sam on the podcast, he talked about how your all's book, Taking America Back for God, he likes to describe it as a New Hope, Star Wars episode, and that right. His new book, The Flag and the Cross, is a little bit darker sequel, like Empire Strikes Back. So what I hear is you're writing the Return of the Jedi, right? That's what I'm hearing. We got the hopeful, we're fighting back now. So
I hope. Yeah, I think, I want to be in the center of God's story. And it seems mostly that is with people that are on the margins. And so for white Christians, we can move to those spaces and live out the ethic of Jesus, and we can give up Christian nationalism and we'll all be better for it. People love the Ewoks. And so if I'm the Return of the Jedi and the Ewok thing, that's great. I hope so. We'll see.
Well, as you're writing this summer, I really hope you work in the word Ewok somewhere.
I'm going to try. I will put it somewhere.
Or something. Maybe you can work it in.
That'll be the Easter egg. And when it comes out, then I'll see if you can find it.
All right. Excellent. Sounds good. Well, thanks, Andrew, so much for joining us on the podcast, but even more so for all of the work and the writing that you're doing. Really appreciate it. And it's really important work. The book is Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States, coming out in June in a new paperback edition, but you can already pre-order it at Amazon, where you're going to leave a positive review, and anywhere else that you want to buy books. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Really appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dangerous Dogma. You can find more information and links in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And don't forget to check out our website, wordandway.org, to learn more about our other offerings, including A Public Witness, a subscriber e-newsletter to help you make sense of faith, culture, and politics. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will share it with your friends on Facebook and head over to iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and write a positive review. It really will help more people to find the show. If you'd like to give to support this program, we greatly appreciate it. And all you have to do at wordandway.org is hit the donate button. And whatever you give there will help support the production of this podcast, as well as our website, monthly magazine, and other offerings. If you have any comments or feedback about this program, you can send those to me at bkaylor@wordandway.org. Thanks for listening.